My name is Damien Caro. You name it the way you want. I'm a technical evangelist, and we actually talk about the latest cutting-edge technologies around infrastructure topics. If you want to connect with me, you can connect with me on email or Twitter, whatever is your preferred way of communicating. We have a rather full agenda for today, and we're going to start by looking at what or how should an application of tomorrow, and I should say even today, what it looks like. What is the architecture of those applications? Don't be scared. It's going to be easy for sysadmins to understand. We're not going to drill into heavy code. However, we are going to look at the overall architecture of those applications. And we will see and understand how and why we need to switch from managing systems, managing virtual machines, to writing code. And again, it's the code that matters for us. The code that actually describes the infrastructure or the configuration of virtual machines. We will see what are the tools and the competencies that are necessary to do that, to achieve that goal. And as a conclusion, I will give you some key takeaways and some resources to go further and deeper on this topic. So how looks an application of tomorrow? Well, that application, it's an app on which I've been working on for the infrastructure side. And that application is a simple Internet of Things, I should say, more precisely, connected cars that I've worked on. It's a proof of concept, just a few machines, but each of those machines have a role and a specific purpose. Another application. That application is being deployed currently by one of our customers. That application is used to predict the business risk connected with a customer based on public data. So as you can see, all of the applications are A, very complex, they're composed of multiple layers, and each of those layers have different life cycles. They have different purposes, and each layer served that purpose. So the question is, each of those components is actually a service-oriented architecture. Each service of those apps is independent. And the reason for that is because we don't want to make the whole application being a monolithic thing that needs to evolve by one at each time. Why do we want that? Because we want to do frequent updates. The business requires those frequent updates. And if you look at something like Azure, I didn't put the number for a good reason, but we have dozens of updates during the last year. A company that we all know about called Netflix. Well, Netflix has weekly updates, or even more frequently. There is a good article about that if you look on the internet. All those frequent updates have to be pushed and published to the app as frequently as it can be. And the reason for that is because we want to follow the business. We want to follow the requirement of the companies. The business pushes the IT, the developers, to do what we call continuous integration. Continuous integration means every time that a piece of code is ready to be published, it has to be integrated into the application that is running. So I have a question for you. How do you operate from a sysadmin point of view? A system that has continuous integration? The answer is in yellow, upside down. Don't go upside down here. It's called continuous operation. That's what I call continuous operations. So we need to go in that direction as sysadmin, as IT pros. We need to evolve toward continuous operations. So how do we operate that? We operate it because I said it, the analyst, the business analyst, the one that look at the stock market, they want companies' agility. They want the company to be as agile as it can be. The business from the company want to follow the customer needs. They want to add a service in their mobile application. They want to be able to deploy a new website because there is a campaign going on. They want to be able to do a certain promo for a limited amount of time, and they need to make sure that the IT follows. We're in a world where IT is becoming a critical asset for the companies. The developers, the devs, they are looking for more frequent updates. They want to be able to build something and have it right available on the web. That's what they want. But at the same time, us, sysadmin, IT pros, we look for stability and resiliency. We want to make sure that what is being published, what is running, is actually stable and we are not going to be woken up at 3 a.m. That's where DevOps come in the game. And DevOps is like the elephant in the room. DevOps can be seen by multiple people, sorry for that, by multiple people with different, for different reasons. If you talk to DevOps, to a developer, the DevOps is going to say, hey, it's just a small deployment. I'm building something, it goes on, and it's DevOps. Some operations guy will say, well, maybe we should do Kanban, which is a process invented by Toyota to identify the bottleneck in a process for operations. And some other will say, it's about collaborations and operations. Some other people will say it's about automation. Well, it's about all of that. It's about having all those characteristics implemented. So DevOps is about multiple faces converging to the same thing, which is about facilitating the business and the processes. So I want to make a small demo, or I want to show you what we would see as DevOps in a fairy tale world. It's going to be easy, simple, and it's usually what we try to pitch as being our DevOps solution. So I don't have any fairy tale, I just have a machine with computers and code. So I'm going to take a very simple application. It's a web application that you can look at it. It's very advanced in terms of code. It's a basic template of a ASP.NET app. Nothing very fancy. I'm just going to do one change. I'm going to add to my code an image. So for that, I will go to my solution. I'm going to take the Melbourne image, the one I took Sunday when I arrived. I'm going to add it into my code. So it's very simple. No need to be a very advanced developer. We can verify how it looks. So that is the application as it runs today on my machine. Bear with me. Now I'm a developer, and basically I will just go to my solution, my application, right-click, and call a commit. So by committing this code, I'm going to say, hey, I'm ready with this change of my app, and I want to push that update to wherever the application runs. So I'm going to commit that change. The commit has been done locally on my repository, and now I need to sync that with my server. So the sync is going to upload the code to my environment in the cloud. So we're going to switch there now. And the environment in the cloud is Visual Studio Online. So it's a component of Azure. And I can look at the build. So what actually we're doing, the code that I have committed is uploaded to Visual Studio Online. And Visual Studio Online is going to trigger a new build for that code that I've done. It's going to take a minute to appear. Oops, here it is. Should look at the queued one. So my code is being built in Azure, and it's going to take a few minutes to do that. While we wait for the code to be uploaded, I can go to the deployment. So I see it's been triggered. I can even look at previous builds. So you can see at the completed builds that happened yesterday. For each build, I can see what was the activity, if it has completed successfully, who did the change, and what was the text that is assigned to this change. So let's look. It's still running. You can look at those builds as well from Visual Studio. And you see I've done some of those builds recently. We can monitor what's going on. It's going to refresh automatically for a while. So now I'm going to switch to Azure. I'm going to show you where it happens. So actually, it is connected with an Azure website. That website is connected with Visual Studio, so I'm not going to disconnect. And what will happen, because of the connection with Visual Studio Online, the content, the build that I have done, that is actually done on Visual Studio Online, is going to be integrated automatically in my website. It's being deployed right now. So again, it takes a while to do all the processes because it has to go from one step to another step, and then the second step goes to the next one. And when it's going to be deployed, my website is going to be refreshed. So that's the website running actually on the internet. If you want to go there, you can connect. Refresh. And there we go. That's a picture I took the other day in front of the cathedral. So, in a nutshell, what we've done, I've written some code, committed that code, and we can have a workflow on this approval process. Then the process will take the code and automatically build and deploy this code to Azure. It can be deployed on an Azure website, or it can be deployed on an Azure virtual machine. This is what I call the fairy tale DevOps environment, because it's a pure, clean, nice .NET world where everything is fine and shiny. As you have seen little pieces of that, continuous integration has critical factors. The first one we've seen is automation. From a developer point of view, it's totally automated. It is self-service because actually I don't have to call anyone to do it. And it's transparent. I know exactly what is going at each step of the process. Now, from the operations point of view, there will be a time where the IT has to be involved. IT will have to be involved to manage the cost that is associated to this application. IT will have to be involved to understand and manage those applications from a performance point of view. IT will have to be involved to monitor and fix the problem when those things go wrong. So for that, we need a common language. The IT and the developers will need a common language, and they will need to understand what's going on each side of the house. The days where the developers will throw the ball to the IT and the IT will blame the developers for writing bad code is over. The connection point is here. The connection point is right now. And it will happen for what I call DevOps in reality. Because the fairy tale world we've seen is good for a demo or a greenfield environment. For applications that exist, the reality is going to be way different. And that's when we start discussing how we switch from VM, virtual machines, VHDs, images to code. The first principle that we consider in this DevOps world is that the servers are immutable. It's almost over the days where we have this bunch of servers and we just maintain and make them evolve one after one, one step after one step, one fix after one fix. And we end up in a situation that we don't even know how we ended there. Or we had a server that has been rebooted for the last year, and one day we reboot and then it crashes because the driver hasn't been correctly uploaded. Servers become immutable, and basically when a server has a problem, we throw it away. It's part of cloud, it's part of virtualization, it's part of DevOps. But basically, operating systems and applications are disposable. You're not happy with your app, your server has a problem, throw it away, get a new one, reapply everything. Data are important. Data matters, for sure. And we have to make sure the data are in a secure location. But in order to achieve that, you need automation. Automation is the key concept around switching from systems management to writing infrastructure as code. I know we've been talking for automation for a while, and I can still pitch myself being a tech head in Europe a while ago, saying, yeah, we need to automate everything, we need to orchestrate everything. It is just the evolution, and it is just the achievement of that message that we've been carrying for the last few years. How do we do that? Well, there are different tools. Well, there are actually multiple tools that can help doing that. One of them, and we're going to look at it, is Azure Resource Manager, or ARM. It's not the chip manufacturer, it's the Azure Resource Manager. It's one of the tools that helps driving infrastructure as code in Azure. But it's not the only one. There are two famous tools around DevOps, which are Chef and Puppet. They're open source technologies built by two companies, but they're very advanced, very mature DevOps tools to manage the operating system configuration. Sorry, not only the operating system configuration, but the whole application configuration on Linux and Windows. PowerShell. PowerShell is definitely the automation piece for Windows. It's a piece of jewelry. It's magnificent, I have no other words. But PowerShell is a very good way to automate the configuration of a VM, or even the configuration of a whole application. And the evolution of PowerShell, as of today, is DSC, desired state configuration. I know there are sessions around DSC those days, so make sure you attend that session, because it's a critical inflection point in the Windows world. Source control. There is no way you can manage infrastructure as code with no source control. You want to be able to roll back to a previous definition of your application in case something goes wrong. Let's say your developers have created a new app. They push this content and you deploy that content to the application running. And let's say it's a famous airline and they have updated that piece of code, but it crashed the whole website. What do you want to do? You just want to roll back as soon as you can to ensure you have the latest running version. Source control is a way to do it. Then we have other tools that you may want to look at or you may have heard before. Jenkins. Jenkins is a tool for continuous integration for software development. It's a server-based that is running on top of containers like Apache Tomcat. And you have a new solution called Docker that has been on the market for a while. It's been rising those days. Docker is, excuse that expression, it's application virtualization. But it brings containers to the application level. You don't run virtual machines. You run applications that are containerized. And Docker is the technology that brings that containerization, I hope I said correctly, to the application level. And finally, Kubernetes. Kubernetes is basically what allows to manage and deploy containerized applications on multiple hosts. So Docker is containerizing the app on a host, and then you can manage that at a higher level across multiple hosts with Kubernetes in a 10-second explanation. It's way more complex, but that's at a very, very high level how it looks like. So those are some of the tools that I have been able to identify today on the market. They're not the only ones. There are plenty of them, but those are the most famous and the most common ones. So let's play a bit. And I want to start by showing you how you could deploy a website with Chef. So, I'm on my app. This one we don't need. I can close this and close that. And I can close this as well. We will not need Visual Studio anymore. So I'm just cleaning a bit the place where we work. So, let's do a bit chef content. So on purpose, on that demo, I'm not going to use anything on Windows. It's a pure open source demo. And the only piece that Microsoft owns in this demo is Azure. So the first thing that I'm going to use with Chef is what we call a cookbook and recipes. So the cookbook is a set of resources that are grouped together and describe the configuration that I want on that system. The main piece is the default.rb, which describes actually what are the elements that I need on that environment. The other piece that is important is the index.html.erb file, which is basically the template of my index.html file. How is this looking? Well, with Chef, in your definition, you say what you want on the machine. So what do I want? I want Apache to be installed. So what do you say? Package, Apache 2, action, install. If for any reason Apache is already installed, Chef will detect that the package is already present and will not do it again. It will help maintaining that exact configuration in place over and over. So in case you have a configuration drift of your machine, Chef is going to control that and reassign the right configuration from the configuration you have described here. For example, the index.html, which is the home page of my website, it's based on a template, index.html.erb. That template will allow me to inject variables and values at deployment time on the machine. Let's have a look at the template. Everyone is familiar with HTML? So, very simple page. And I do a couple of things here. I have a code, and I insert variables coming from my node definition. So I can inject values that I have described and values from the node, like the FQDN. Then I have pictures and pages. That's pretty easy. Now that we have seen how the code looks like, and we have seen how my index.html page will look like, I'm going to deploy that machine. Let me copy and paste. And while it deploys, I will give you some insights on what I'm doing. It takes a bit of time. Verifying that everything is good. Yep. So, with this, what I'm doing? I'm actually running a script that says on Azure, I want to create a server that is based in Europe. That's the location. And it is based on a source image, which is an Ubuntu VM. So why did I select an Ubuntu VM? Well, I could have selected any other distribution, or I could have used Windows for that. The reason is that image, that machine, is totally new. It doesn't have anything installed. Now it's kicking off the machine in Azure, and once the machine has been deployed on Azure, it will connect with SSH. Oops, there it is. So it's connecting with an SSH user, and you can see my password. I've been lazy on that. And then, it's going to deploy what we call a run list, which is a list of configurations that I need to apply on that machine. So you can see I'm deploying two things, Apache and my own configuration PHP application. Now, while this is continuing, I'm going to switch to Azure and show how we have worked on the integration of Azure and Chef or Puppet to do that deployment at deployment time of Windows. So that's the old Azure portal. And if you have been there and create a new virtual machine, oops. When you select your machine, Azure user. You go through the wizard, the standard wizard of creating a machine in Azure. At the end, you haven't paid the attention yet. You have the ability to add configuration extensions. You can deploy Puppet within the Windows VM. So when the VM starts, it has the agent running and configured with the manifest applied on that machine. But you can also do it on Chef. So when you do the Chef deployment, that machine will get its Chef configuration applied with the right run list and cookbook. Oops. So I'm going to select here a client RB file that I've created before. Here it is. So I select my client RB file. I need to select my validation key. The validation key will allow me to configure and authenticate that machine toward my Chef configuration or Chef management server. And then you type the run list. and I need to verify the name. So it's going to be my Azure Cookbook. So by doing that, when the Windows machine is being deployed, it will actually deploy, guess what? Apache or IIS or any web or any file you want to have on that system. So it's creating the machine, and in the meantime, let's look back on the chef that we have done before. So it's installing PHP, it's deploying a bunch of content, it's a bunch of HTML file, and we can monitor that as it's being deployed to Azure. While it continues to deploy, I want to come back to the variables on my recipe, on my cookbook. So you remember my index.html ERB has some variables. Those variables come from the attributes. And the attributes are not only created in code, but they are also connected into the VM. The last piece, I connect to a source to add an image. So we add the source on the image at deployment time. And finally, we start the service, which is Apache 2. Okay, here it is. The machine has been deployed. The website exists. If you're connected on internet, you can go there and you can look at the page. So it's, it's in the cache. Oops. I think I've deployed the wrong page. That's the page for 3 weeks from now. Don't worry. That's easy, easy fix. That's an easy fix. You remember what I said about Azure and DevOps? It's about source control. So here on my cookbook, I've used Git, which is a tool to manage source control. So I can go with Git log, and Git log will show me all the commit I've made on that repository, which is local, but it could be remote. So every time I've made a change to the code, my infrastructure code, or my application code, I know what has happened. So the last one we have is, yeah, the TechEd website for Sydney. But the one I want is the one from Melbourne. So easy fix. I just need to copy and paste the GUID. There we go. I'm going to do a Git checkout. So that line of code is going to actually point my code to the Melbourne website. Now we are pointing at the Melbourne website version. What do I need to do? I need to re-upload that piece of code to my Chef management server. That's a fairly easy fix. So basically you use that. You upload the code to the Chef management server, which is also in the cloud. You can manage versions for that, by the way. We need to wait for a minute for that. While it does this, I'm going to SSH to the VM. Decade. You all know the password, so I guess you could SSH in as me. Let's see. Now on that VM, there is one thing we need to do. It's basically run the Chef client to re-get its configuration from my Chef server. It would do it automatically in the next 30 minutes. However, I don't have the luxury of the time, so that's why I'm kicking off the Chef client to run again. As the Chef client runs, it will compare its existing configuration with my new configuration, or my old new configuration. And we will see the drift. The log that I will see on the console is going to show me the drift between what it has on the machine and what I want to apply. So you see there is an update in content in index.html. It has removed Teched Sydney, and it's adding Teched Melbourne. So from the log, I look very confident. Let's have a look there. Yeah, I got the right website. It was lovely on Sunday. So, where are we? Good. So that is that is my, I would say, the demo using the different code and management. Now, I want to show you something else. That's a simple demo that runs on your website. But actually, you have a bunch of cookbooks and recipes that exist on Chef that you could apply on Windows as well on Linux. And one of the examples I have is WordPress. And you have a cookbook that allows you to deploy WordPress automatically on Windows. So you can get this cookbook, deploy it, and as you go, at the end of it, the machine will have a WordPress up and running. You can do it with your own app. You can do it with anything more complex. Here it is. So you kick off pretty much the same way. And in a few minutes, I will have a fully running WordPress website. But I don't really have the time for that. I'm just going to let it run in the background, and we'll see at the end of the session if this is already done. Now, infrastructure as code, you see how it looks for one VM, but it can go for multiple VM at the same time. This is something that we have implemented today. It's the beginning of it on Microsoft Azure. So basically on Microsoft Azure, we're in transition between the old portal, the one you see here, that is focusing on each type of resource, virtual machines, cloud service, database, etc. We're switching from that philosophy to a resource-based philosophy. Resource-based philosophy means we will group the resources that matters together. So, what I mean here, if you want to create a new, you can create a new virtual machine that is running Windows Server 2012 R2 data center. That's one option, and that's one VM. But you can also deploy a SharePoint farm, which means you're not going to deploy only one machine, but you're going to deploy a bunch of frontend and maybe a cluster for the database. By clicking that, you just define the name of the farm, that's the beauty of the cloud, so you basically deploy, you define the name, and Azure will deploy the machine based on the configuration you have defined in that template. Based on the internet connectivity, okay, let's try again. SharePoint farm, maybe not. We'll see if we get the SharePoint farm later today. Oh, here it is. Okay, next time. You get the idea. You basically give the name of the resource, and it will create the machines automatically. Let's switch a bit to something more Microsoft-centric. So in PowerShell, you can look at how those templates look like. You need to switch to the new Azure mode in PowerShell, and you do the switch Azure mode, Azure Resource Manager. So we're going to basically run that. And then I'm going to get the list of the gallery templates that are available today on the Azure Resource Manager portal. And in order to make it nice and look nice, I'm going to use the out-grid view, which brings everything in the grid on PowerShell, so you don't have to look at thousands of lines in text. And I can filter here on SharePoint. There we go. So we have two templates for SharePoint. The 0.2, which is running on, it's the farm running in 2013. And the second one, the trial is one single server, one instance, one database, all co-located on one machine. The one I want is the preview for the farm. I'm going to copy. And you use the save, Azure Resource Gallery template. Identity. Aha. There we go. So I just need to put the right name. And I'm going to save that. Demo teched.json. So for those who are not familiar with JSON, JSON is a language that will allow you to be descriptive in what you want. File has been saved. There we go. So that's how the JSON content looks like. Let me switch directly to what is important. Oops. Let me try again. So here, you can describe the subnet. So when you're going to deploy the machines are going to be connected to the subnet you describe. And that JSON not only knows that there is one subnet, but it also knows what are the VNet address range. It also knows the configuration of the servers. We know we have remote desktop with port 3389. We also have PowerShell on 5986. It's a very powerful approach that allows to be extremely descriptive in what you want to have on Azure. So for example here, the storage profile. You have the source image, you get the VAG URI, you get the disk name, and you define the caching. Once the machine is deployed, it will get that storage attached to it. That's what we have in the new Azure portal, the Azure Resource Manager. So, how do you start? Where do you start? You start with, first of all, you need to identify the appropriate environment. You get a new app, or you take an existing app with a new release to start implementing some of DevOps. You're not going to implement DevOps all up from one day to another. It's going to take time. DevOps is a journey. It's not a destination. But don't reinvent the wheel. There are plenty of content that are available on Microsoft or on the open source community. And you need to integrate the technology with the processes. You need to integrate the operations and development. There is one thing that matters, is the size of the teams. And the smaller size are the better. Because those teams will communicate more efficiently and the operations will consider being part of the application, which is the case. Operations is part of the application lifecycle. The operations are evolving those days. The operations need to consider that the application is part of the business. It's part of the application development. And the operation team brings knowledge around security, backup, monitoring, recovery, security. I think I said that. At the end of the day, the purpose of that is to align the cost of running an app to what value it brings to the company. And the lower the cost of the operations are, the better it is, the more connected it is with the business. DevOps is not about product. It's about product, processes, and people. Or you take it the other way around. It's about people, process, and product. It's about the combination of those three. And the tooling you will take is just a consequence of your organization. It shouldn't be the opposite way. Remember, DevOps is a journey. And you never start a journey by running. You start a journey by walking. And you do a step, then another one. That's the way you should look at it. You should make one step after one step. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. Make sure you do it small step, baby steps. Because if you don't do that, you're going to fall. And that's the last thing we want. And operations is part of the application development. It's not or, it's and that's why we call it DevOps. Now, as you can see, it's a broad topic. It's a broad topic where we can speak on that for hours. There are additional resources that we have put together. We have different links that are available on the deck, so you can get it once you download the presentation on the portal. And we have an online event that is happening next week around DevOps, which will bring even more discussions around the new Azure portal and Azure Resource Manager. If you want to attend, feel free to do that. I want to highlight a course on Microsoft Virtual Academy, DevOps, an IT Pro Guide. This is the first resource we have. Please go there and look at it. With that, I would like to say thank you. Don't forget to fill in the evaluation forms. And if you have any questions, this is the time for it. If you don't have any questions, you're free to go and have a good lunch. And with that, I will say, as we say in France, bon appétit. Thank you.